deep down. Reacher's designated handler told him it wasn't going to be easy. There were going to be difficulties, numerous and various, a real challenge. The guy had no kind of a bedside manner. Normally, handlers started with the good news.
Maybe there isn't any, Reacher thought.
The handler was an intelligence colonel named Cornelius Christopher, but that was the only thing wrong with him. He looked like a decent guy. Despite the fancy name, he seemed to have turned out fairly plain and pragmatic. Reacher would have liked him, except he had never met him before. Going undercover with a handler you never met before led to inefficiency, or worse. Christopher asked,
"How much did they tell you yesterday?"
Reacher said, "I was in Frankfurt yesterday, which is in Germany. No one told me anything, except to get on a plane to Dulles and then report to this office."
"I see,"
Christopher said. "What should they have told me?"
"You really know nothing about this?"
"Some local trouble with staff officers."
"So they did tell you something?"
"No one told me anything, but I'm an investigator. I do this stuff for a living, and some things are fairly obvious. I'm a relatively new guy, who has so far been posted almost exclusively overseas. Therefore, I'm almost certainly unknown to the kind of staff officer who doesn't get out much."
"Out of where?"
"The Beltway, for instance. Call it a 2-mile radius from this very office. Maybe they also have a fishing cottage on a lake somewhere, but that's not the kind of place I'm likely to have been."
"You're not very happy, are you?"
"I've had more promising days."
"What's your problem?"
"When does this thing start?"
"This afternoon."
"Well, that's my problem, right there. I've got a handler I never met before, and a situation I know nothing about."
"Scared?"
"It's bad workmanship. It's shoddy and confused. It shows no pride, because you guys are always the same. There's a clue in the title, remember?"
"What title?"
"Your title. Military intelligence. Ideally, both of those words should mean something to you, but surely at least one of them does. One at a time, if you wish. On alternate days, if you prefer."
"Oh, feel free to give me your honest opinion."
Reacher said, "So, what do I need to know?"
And at that same minute, a car backed out of a driveway in a distant location, slowly. A front-wheel drive car, with a yelp as the tires turned. Not the shriek of speed, the opposite, a suburban sound. Rubber on a tended blacktop driveway, like the smell of the sprinkler on the summer air. Then the car paused, and the driver selected a forward gear, and the car rolled south, gently, over the speed bumps that the driver himself had argued should be put in for the safety of the children. Then the car turned a little west, towards the highway, ready to join the mighty flow towards the capital. Colonel Cornelius Christopher sat forward and made a space on his desk, paired hands coming together, back to back, and then sweeping apart, pushing clutter aside. The move was emphatic, but purely metaphorical. There was nothing on the desk. No clutter.
"A good man-manager," Reacher thought. "He let me have my say, and now we're moving right along."
Christopher said,
"There's no danger. It's going to be all talking."
Reacher said, "Talking about what?"
"You were right. It's about staff officers. There are 4 of them. One of them is bad. They're all political liaison people. To the House and the Senate. They practically live there, you know the type. Going places, fast track. Better not to get in their way."
"Specifically?"
"The Army is asking for a new sniper rifle. We're giving evidence to some new pre-committee, begging, basically, our legislative overseers. Well, not really. They sent senior staffers instead. We're not even talking to elected officials."
"Now you don't sound very happy."
"I'm not here to be happy. The liaison officers are sitting in on these hearings, obviously, and one of them is leaking. Design criteria, load, range, size, shape, weight, and budget."
"Leaking to who?"
"A likely bidder located overseas, we assume. A foreign manufacturer, in other words. Someone that wants the business. Someone that likes a rigged game."
"Is the business worth it? How many sniper rifles do we buy, and how much do we pay for them?"
"It's the implied endorsement. They can sell copies for $5,000 each to the freak market, the price of a decent used car, as many as they want, like selling crack.
Who else is at these hearings?
There's our four liaison and the four staffers we're pitching to, plus our procurement guy and the Marine procurement guy, plus a Ranger sniper and a Marine sniper for color commentary.
The Marines are involved?
In a minority way. They didn't bring their own liaison, for instance, but it's definitely a joint project. No other way of doing a thing like this.
So why wouldn't it be the Marines leaking? Their procurement guy or their sniper? Why assume it's our guys?
The leaks are via a fax machine inside the Capitol building, which is where our liaison guys have their offices.
How certain are you of that?
Completely.
Could be the staffers. They're in the Capitol building, presumably.
Different phone network. Our legislative overseers are on some new super-duper thing. Our offices are still steam-powered.
Okay, so it's one of our guys.
I'm afraid so,
Christopher said. Motive?
Money. Got to be. I can't see anyone forming a deep ideological attachment to a European firearms manufacturer, can you? And money is always a factor for officers like these. They're mixing with corporate lawyers and lobbyists all the time. It's easy to feel like the poor relation.
Can't we just watch their fax machine?
Not inside the Capitol building. Our legislative overseers don't like surveillance. Too many unintended consequences.
Are they sending to an overseas fax number?
No, it's a local number. But these guys hire local people as agents and lobbyists.
So, my job is what?
To find out which one of our guys is the bad apple. By talking to them.
Where?
In the committee at first. The Ranger sniper has been recalled. Personal reasons. You're gonna take his place.
As what?
Another Ranger sniper.
With a real Marine sniper in the room? I'll be asked for opinions. He'll nail me in a second.
So be Delta Force, not Rangers.
Be mysterious.
Don't say anything. Be all weird and silent. Grow a beard.
Before this afternoon?
Don't worry about it. We've seen your file. You know which end of a rifle is which. We have confidence in you.
Thank you.
Oh, there's one other thing.
Which is?
Our liaison guys are not guys. They're women.
All of them?
All four.
Does that make a difference?
I sincerely hope so. Some of the talking is going to have to be social. That's easier with women. You can do it one-on-one. Men always want to drink in groups.
So, I'm here to take women to bars and ask them what they want to drink. And, by the way, are they leaking military secrets overseas? Is that the idea?
You'll have to be more subtle than that, but yes, it's a kind of interrogation. That's all, which you're supposed to be good at. You're supposed to do this stuff for a living.
In which case, why not arrest them all and interrogate them properly?
Because three of the four are innocent. Where there's smoke, there's fire, and so on. Their careers would be hurt.
But that never stopped you before.
We never had fast-track people before. Not like this. Going places. We wouldn't cripple them all. One of them would survive, and she'd get her revenge.
Reacher said, I'm just trying to establish the rules of engagement.
Anything that wouldn't get thrown out of court for blatant illegality.
Blatant?
Flashing red with a siren. That kind of blatant.
That bad?
We can't tolerate this kind of thing. Not with a foreign manufacturer. We have politicians to please, and they have donors to protect. American donors.
Like a rigged game.
There's two different kinds of rigged. Our kind and their kind.
Understood. Reacher said.
There's no danger, Christopher said again. It's all just talking.
So, what are the difficulties? What's not going to be easy?
Now that's complicated, Christopher said.
The front-wheel drive car joined the traffic stream on the highway. It became just one of thousands, all heading the same way, all fast and focused and linear and metallic, like giant rounds fired from giant chain gun barrels somewhere far behind them, which was a mental image the driver liked very much. He was a bullet, implacable and relentless, singular in his purpose. He was heading for his target. His aim was true.
Across the barrier, no one was heading in the other direction. The morning flow was all one way, high speed and crowded, towards the distant city.
Christopher did the thing with his hands again, clearing metaphorical clutter off his desk and out of the conversation, ready for a new topic. The difficulties. He said, "It's a speed issue. We have to be quick, and at the same time we have to keep things normal for the Marine Corps. We can't let them suspect we have a leak, so we can't stop talking or they'll guess. But we can't let much more stuff go overseas, so you can't waste time." Reacher said, "What, this is going to be like speed dating?" "You're new in town, so why wouldn't you?" "I would. Believe me, it would be like a dream come true, but it takes two to tango, and I'm a realistic guy. On a good day, I could get a woman to look at me, maybe, but four women all at once is not very likely." Christopher nodded. "That's the complication," he said. "That's the difficulty we were worrying about. Plus, these women are scary. West Pointers, off the charts IQs, fast track, going places." "You can imagine."
"I don't have to imagine. I was at West Point."
"We know. We checked. You didn't overlap with any of them."
"Are any of them married?"
"No, fortunately. Fast track women don't get married. Not until the time is right."
"Any serious relationships?"
"Same answer."
"Are they older or younger than me?"
"Older. 29 and 30.
"Then that's another negative. Most women date older men. And what rank am I going to be?"
"You're going in as a sergeant. Most snipers are.
Women like that don't want enlisted men."
Christopher nodded again. "I said at the beginning this wasn't going to be easy. But think logically. You might not need to go through all four. You might hit lucky the very first time or the second. And you might just know anyway. We have to assume the guilty one will resist any kind of contact. It could be that three say yes and one says no, in which case, she's the one."
"They'll all resist contact. They'll all say no.
Maybe one slightly more emphatically than the others."
"I'm not sure I could tell the difference. It always feels about the same to me. My social antenna must not be very well developed."
"We don't see another way of doing this."
Reacher nodded. He asked, "Did you get me a uniform?"
"We got you a suit."
"Why?"
"Because you're going to be a Ranger, or Delta, and they like to show up in civvies. It makes them feel like secret agents."
"It won't fit."
"The suit? Oh, it'll fit. Your height and weight are in your file. It was easy. It was like ordering anything, except bigger."
"Have you got bios on these women?"
"Detailed," Christopher said, "plus transcripts of everything said at the hearings so far. You should probably read those first. The way they talk will tell you more than the bios."
5 miles west, across the Potomac River, a 30-year-old woman belted a fanny pack low on her hips and moved it around until it was comfortable in its accustomed position. Then she bent forward and flipped her hair back and slid a toweling band in place, easing it back and back until it was seated just right. Then she kicked the hallway baseboard for luck, left toes, right toes, and then she opened her door and stepped out and ran in place for a moment, just gently, warming up, loosening, getting ready, facing it down. 5 miles, 30 minutes. Possible. It would depend on the lights, fundamentally. If more than half of the crosswalks were green, she would make it. 51%, that was all she needed. Less than that, she wouldn't. Simple arithmetic, a fact of life. No disgrace. Except, it was. Failure was always a disgrace. She took a breath, and another, and she hit her watch. And she ran down her path, and left onto the sidewalk, and she settled in for the first unbroken stretch. Long, easy strides, relaxed but pushing just a little, breathing well, moving well, her hair swinging behind her in a perfect circular rhythmic pattern, symmetrical, like a metronome. The first crosswalk was green. Reacher started with the transcripts, the pre-committee hearings. There were records of 2 separate sessions, the first 2 weeks ago and the second 1 week ago, hence the rush. The third session was due. The transcripts were exactly what transcripts should be. Every vocal sound uttered in the room had been transcribed onto paper. Every and and you know. Every false start, every repetition, every tail off, every stutter and stammer, every hopeless tangle and broken train of thought. Reading the pages was almost like hearing the voices, but not quite. There was a semi-real quality. Speech never hit paper just right, however good the transcriber. The first to speak was one of the Senate staffers. Reacher could picture the guy, not young, disrespectful to send a kid unless the kid was a hotshot, and hotshots didn't get sent to waste time listening for 16 hours before saying no to the Army. So it would be an older guy, solid and substantial and been there forever, but a clear B-lister all the same. Because A-listers didn't get sent to waste time listening for 16 hours before saying no to the Army, either. This particular example of a senior B-lister sounded puffed up and bossy. He started out by making himself chairman of the board. He just announced it. No one objected. Not that Reacher expected anyone to. Presumably the guy had a dynamic of his own going on with the other staffers, and why would the Army or the jarheads care which one of the assholes did what? So the guy went ahead and formally recited the purpose of the meeting, which he said was to examine available courses of action in the light of the perceived requirement for a new infantry weapon, namely a sniper rifle. Reacher didn't like that sentence at all, because of the word perceived. Clearly that was how the argument was going to go. You don't really need this. Yes, we do. Why? Which was the big bureaucratic elephant trap right there. The on-the-ground snipers would drift the wrong way. Had they ever missed a shot because of inferior equipment? Hell no, sir, we never miss our shots. Hell, we can use anything. Hell, we could make our own damn sniper rifles out of your granddaddy's old varmint gun and a length of rainwater gutter and a roll of goddamn duct tape, sir. And the procurement officers would drift too far the other way until they started sounding like gun nuts or NRA members writing a letter to Santa Claus. So, it was a ritual dance. There was no way of winning. It was 1986, and it was all about planes and missiles and computers and laser-guided integrated systems. Firearms were boring. They were going to lose. But not until their wet-dream sniper rifle specification leaked overseas. The foreign manufacturer could gear up ahead of the next attempt, or go right ahead and build the thing and sell it to the Soviets. Reacher turned the pages, and it went pretty much as he had guessed it would. The puffed-up, bossy guy asked why they needed the new rifle, and no one answered. The bossy guy asked them to pretend he was an idiot and knew nothing about the subject. Not a big ask, Reacher thought. Then the Army procurement guy spoke up, and the typist must have nearly worn out his M key. Pause. The bossy guy said they could come back to that. Then he asked what exactly they were looking for, and things got back on solid ground, with long back-and-forths about what qualities a sniper rifle needed. Cold shot accuracy was head of the list, of course. Often a sniper just gets one chance, which by definition will be out of a cold barrel. It has to hit. So the barrel is all about perfectly uniform internal dimensions and heavy match-grade steel with the right twist and maybe some fluting for stiffness and reduced weight, the whole thing properly bedded into the stock, which shouldn't swell or shrink depending on the weather or be too heavy to carry 20 miles, and so on. The liaison women spoke often and at length. The first up was identified by the initials CR. She had said, "This is extremely high-tech metalwork we're talking about here, and we'll need groundbreaking optics. Maybe we could incorporate laser rangefinding. This could be very exciting. It could be a great research opportunity for somebody." A smart woman, whole sentences and good sentences. She was trying to make it radical, not boring, and she was hinting at big dollars getting spent in someone's district, which would be an IOU any senator would be happy to tuck away in his vest pocket, a good tactical approach. But it didn't work. The chairman of the board asked, "Who's going to pay for all that?" At which point the transcriber had written, "Pause." Reacher switched to the bio stack and found that CR was Christine Richardson from Orange County, California, private prep school, private high school, West Point. She was 30 years old and already a lieutenant colonel, fast track, and the political shop was a greased rail anyway. Nice work if you could get it. The 30-year-old woman with the fanny pack and the headband made it through three crosswalks on green and got held up at the next three on red. The seventh turned green before she got there, but it was choked with walkers, and they were slow to get going, so she got hung up behind them, running on the spot for 2 whole seconds, then pushing through, dodging left, dodging right, refusing to cut away diagonally because then the distance would be less than the full 5 miles, which would be cheating, and she never cheated. At least, not with running. She made it through the crowd to the opposite corner, and she turned right, and she logged the junction in her mind as half red and half green, which seemed fair to her, and which meant, so far, she was running exactly 50-50, 3.5 green, 3.5 red, which was not a catastrophe, but was not great either, because she liked to bank plenty of greens well before she got closer to the center, where things were always stickier. She ran on, another unbroken stretch, her strides still long and easy, still relaxed, but pushing now just a little more, picking up the pace, still breathing well, still moving well, her hair still swinging behind her in its perfect pattern, still symmetrical, still like a metronome. The next crosswalk was red. The man in the car got snarled up in traffic where 270 approached the beltway, inevitable and expected. Orderly deceleration by all concerned, the flow hanging together, still like the 1,000-round burst from the distant chain gun, but fully subsonic now. Slow and fat and stealthy in the air. 355 to Wisconsin Avenue would be jammed, so he decided to stay on until 16th Street, east of Rock Creek Park. It wouldn't be a racetrack, but it would be better, and it would drop him down all the way to Scott Circle, and then Mass Ave ran all the way to the Capitol. He was a bullet, and he was still on target.
From the other side of the office, Cornelius Christopher said, "Okay, library hour is over. Go get your suit now. You can take the documents with you, but not out of the building."
The supply office was two floors down, not exactly full of exploding fountain pens or cameras concealed in buttonhole flowers, but full of distantly related stuff, and certainly full of all the items needed to turn an honest man into a fake. The suit was well chosen, not remotely expensive or up-to-date, but not tacky either. Some kind of gray sharkskin weave, probably some man-made fiber in there, or a lot. Wide lapels like 5 years ago, exactly what an enlisted man would wear to a bank interview or a bail hearing. It was artfully creased here and there, from years in an imaginary closet, and there was even room dust on the collar. It looked like it was going to fit, except the arms and the shoulders. Reacher's file figures showed 6'5 and 250, and he was reasonably in proportion, like a regular guy enlarged, except for arms as long as a gorilla's and shoulders like basketballs stuffed in a sack. There was a button-down shirt that was going to be way too small in the neck, but that was okay, because soldiers in suits were supposed to look awkward and uncomfortable. The shirt was blue, and there was a red tie with it, with small blue crests on it. It could have come from a rifle club somewhere. It was a good choice. The undershirt and the boxers were standard white PX items, which was fine because Reacher had never heard of anyone buying that kind of stuff anywhere else. There was a pair of black PX socks and a pair of black dress uniform shoes. They looked to be the right size. The supply guy said,
"Try it all on. If there's a problem, we can do some alterations. If not, you should keep it on, get used to it, and wear it in some. You'd already be on a bus or a plane by now if you were really coming in from somewhere."
The shirt sleeves ended up half-staff, and the neck couldn't get close to buttoning, but the effect was okay. Every sergeant in civvies Reacher had ever seen wrenched his tie loose after about 10 minutes. The suit coat was tight across the shoulders, and the sleeves stopped short of the knobs on the side of his wrists. He stood back and checked a mirror. Perfect. A sergeant's salary was embarrassingly close to the poverty line, and sergeants didn't read GQ, not usually. The whole ensemble looked exactly like $100 grudgingly spent at the outlet mall ahead of a sister-in-law's second wedding. The supply guy said,
"Keep it on. It'll do."
Reacher was supposed to supply his own pocket junk, so next up was ID. It had his real name and his photograph on it, but a master sergeant's rank, and an infantry unit sufficiently generic to be plausible for a guy deployed with special forces, shooting individuals one at a time from a mile away.
"How do I communicate with the colonel?" Reacher asked.
"Try the telephone,"
the supply guy said.
"Sometimes hard to find a phone in a hurry."
"There's no danger,"
the supply guy said.
"It's all just talking."
The woman with the fanny pack and the headband crossed the Potomac on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, high above the water, running hard, die straight, through the hot, swampy air, a glorious, unbroken sprint, heading for Georgetown, but not planning to get there. She was going to turn right on M Street, which became Pennsylvania Avenue, all the way to Washington Circle, and then New Hampshire Avenue to DuPont Circle, and then Mass Ave the rest of the way to the Capitol itself. A crazy route, geographically, but any other option was either less or more than 5 miles, and 5 miles was what she ran, to the inch. Anyone else would have used her car's odometer on a quiet Sunday morning. But she had bought a surveyor's wheel, a big yellow thing on a stick, and she had walked with it 4 separate times before she came up with 8,800 yards exactly, and not a single step less or more. Precision was important. She ran on. By that point, she could feel a wide sweat stripe all the way down her back, and her throat was starting to burn. Pollution hanging over the sluggish river, a visible cloud. But she dug in and pushed on. Long, long strides. Fast cadence, arms pumping. Her headband was soaked. But she was ahead of schedule. Just. Many variables ahead, but she had a chance of making it. 5 miles in 30 minutes.
8,800 yards in 1,800 seconds, 14 and two-thirds feet a second. Not an international distance, so there was no world record, no national record, no Olympic record. But the greats might have done it in 24 minutes. So 30 was acceptable, for her, with traffic and lights and office workers in the way. She pushed on, breathing hard, still moving well, right up there in the zone. The traffic on 16th Street was stop-start heavy, frustration on every block, past Juniper Street, and Iris, and Hemlock, and Holly, and Geranium, and Floral, then past Walter Reed, with the park green and serene on the right. The driver was no longer a bullet. He was shrapnel at best, subject to aerodynamic forces, jinking right and left between the lanes to win some fractional advantage on the dead straight road. A southern town built for horses and buggies, perspiring gentlemen in hats and vests, flicking mosquitoes away, now sclerotic with jammed vehicles, superheated air shimmering above their hoods, expensive paint winking in the sun. He still had a long way to go. He was going to be late. Reacher walked the corridors until he smelled an office with a coffee machine going. He ducked in and helped himself to a cup. Practicing a sergeant's manner, on the surface, quiet and deferential, with ramrod competence showing underneath. But the office was empty, so his acting was wasted, and the coffee was burnt and stewed. But he took it with him anyway in one hand, the sheaf of documents in the other, all the way back to Cornelius Christopher's office. Christopher said, "You look the part." Reacher said, "Do I? Your file says you're pretty good with a long gun." "I do my best." "You could have been a real sniper." "Too much waiting around. Too much mud. The best snipers are always country boys." "And you're a city boy." "I'm a nowhere boy. I grew up on Marine bases." "Yet you joined the Army?" "I'm, naturally contrary." "Did you finish your reading?" "Not yet." "We checked for financial irregularities," Christopher said, "or financial excesses, I suppose, but they're all living within their means. Appropriate accommodations, four-cylinder cars, good clothes but small wardrobes, modest jewelry, no vacations, not that they'd take a vacation anyway, not fast-track people, not if they want to be chief of staff one day or a defense industry lobbyist." Reacher put the 30-year-old Lieutenant Colonel Christine Richardson to the bottom of the pile and started in on the second of the women, 29 years old and a mere major, name of Bryony Walker, the daughter of a retired naval officer, brought up mostly in Seattle and San Diego, public elementary school, public high school, valedictorian, West Point. Christopher said, "I hope it's not her." Reacher said, "Why?" "Well, the naval connection." "You like the Navy?" "Not much, but it's still a military family." The third candidate was another 30-year-old light colonel, this one called Darwin DeWitt. And right there, Reacher knew she wasn't the product of a military family, not with a name like that. In fact, she was the daughter of a Houston businessman who owned about 100 dent repair franchises. Private education all the way. Softball star, West Point. The fourth was Alice Vaz, age 30, lieutenant colonel, granddaughter of another lieutenant colonel, except this one had been called Mikhail Vasilievich, and he had been lieutenant colonel in the Red Army, a Soviet. His son, Alice's father, had gotten out of Hungary just in time, with a pregnant wife, and Alice had been born in the United States, a citizen, California, public elementary, public high, West Point.
"Notice anything definitive?"
Christopher asked. Reacher said, "Their names are perfectly alphabetical. Alice, Bryony, Christine, and Darwin.
Yeah, okay, apart from that,
two of them are rich girls. What does that do to your money motive?"
"Maybe taking money is a habit with rich people. Maybe that's how they get rich in the first place. Did you notice anything else?"
"No."
"Neither did we."
The woman with the fanny pack and the headband was on New Hampshire Avenue, gunning hard up the rise, the hubbub of DuPont Circle already visible in the haze ahead. She was up two greens on the crosswalks, and she could see it already, reaching the Capitol steps, slamming her hand on her wrist to stop the watch, gasping for air, once, twice, bent over, hands on knees, then raising her head, then bringing her arm up slowly and blinking the sweat from her eyes and focusing on the pale LCD readout and seeing the magic numbers
29-something. She could do it. She hammered on, striding short because of the gradient, really breathing, really hurting, but still moving well. The man in the car was still on 16th Street. He had the air on high, but even so he could feel sweat on his back, vinyl upholstery, and a four-cylinder motor with no power to spare for a big compressor. He was just past Harvard Street, getting to where young and rent-strapped aides were forced to live. No cars for them. They were walking to work, right alongside him, about the same speed. He watched one, a girl, in pantyhose despite the heat, the nylon scissoring fast. Ugly white athletic sneakers on her feet, with tube socks, her dress shoes no doubt in the big bag she was carrying, along with briefing papers and position papers and talking points, maybe with a makeup kit, hoping against hope everyone else would be busy and she would get to go on the television news for a comment. There were male versions, too, dressed out of a Brooks Brothers sale, heads high, striding out. Every block brought more of them, twos and threes, until both sidewalks were full of them, all heading the same way, power walking, almost an army, an unstoppable force, clean living and idealistic young people setting out to do good for their country. They were going to get to work before him. The traffic was awful. The transcript showed that the second pre-committee hearing had picked up more or less exactly where the first had left off, solidly on the safe ground of technical discussions, about minutiae like actions and stocks and betting and triggers and scopes. It was as if a collective but unspoken agreement had been reached to avoid unpleasant issues and to run out the clock with the kind of things shooters like to talk about. The four liaison women poked and prodded and drew the men out endlessly, going over things again and again, refining details until Reacher could practically see the new weapon in his mind's eye. Three of them were doing it just to keep the ball rolling, and the fourth was lapping it all up, no doubt picturing her contact in a foreign boardroom, reading her facts, unable to believe the precision of the specification he was being handed. Who was the fourth? Christine Richardson and Darwin DeWitt did most of the talking. The transcript looked like a movie screenplay where CR and DD were the big stars. They each got plenty of ink, but their approaches were different. Richardson was rah-rah for the Army, every question and every point laying a kind of guilt trip on the politicians for not rushing to make the world a safer place. DeWitt showed more concern for the congressional point of view. She was almost a fifth skeptic. Devil's advocate, maybe. Or perhaps her sympathies genuinely lay elsewhere. Perhaps her Houston dent repair upbringing had made her a fiscal conservative. But wherever she was coming from, she laid bare the details of the secret spec as much as anyone. Bryony Walker and Alice Vaz said less. Walker was all about accuracy, the naval family. She wanted the rifle to be like the guns on her daddy's ships, artillery instruments, infallible when properly aimed. And she was weirdly interested in the end results.
She asked about headshots and chest shots, about how it felt to wait while the bullet flew, about what they saw through the scope afterwards. The effect was almost pornographic. Alice Vaz asked mostly wider questions. The others debated rifle stocks made of composite materials, which wouldn't shrink or swell no matter the conditions, and she asked about the conditions. Where in the world was this rifle likely to go? How hot? How cold? How high? How wet? She didn't get clear answers, and after a spell she gave up. There were no AV attributions in the last 20 pages of the transcript. Christopher asked, "Gut feeling?" Reacher said, "Just from this." "Why not?"
"Then I would say it's Christine Richardson. She sounds like the prime mover. She wants everything spelled out every which way. No secrets with that woman."
"I could say she's trying to sell it. I could say she thinks the political guys will find that stuff interesting."
"No, she knows they don't. But she keeps on talking anyway. She won't let them leave anything vague or unspecified. Why is that?"
"Yeah, maybe she has OCD.
"What's that?"
"Obsessive compulsive disorder. Like, alphabetizing your underwear."
"How do you alphabetize underwear?"
"Figure speech."
"So you're happy with Richardson?"
"Nope," Christopher said. "We think it's her too. From the externalities in the transcripts at least. The issue is going to be proving it."
The woman with the fanny pack and the headband was on Mass Ave, approaching Scott Circle, and the man in the car was on 16th Street, approaching Scott Circle. Their average speeds for the last many minutes had been more or less identical, at 10 miles an hour. Her progress steady and resolute and relentless. His frustratingly stop, start, fast, fast, slow. She was pushing hard, ready for an iconic athletic breakthrough, desperate for it. And he was agitated about the time, anxious about being late, wishing he could have parked and taken the metro without getting back at the end of the day to find all his wheels had been stolen. It happened like this. She was on the left-hand sidewalk, on Mass Ave, and he was at right angles to her, in 16th Street's extreme right lane, wanting to come off into the circle. She was looking straight ahead, watching the traffic, watching the upcoming crosswalk lights, trying to time it, suddenly convinced that if she got held up there, her bid was over. He was looking beyond the three cars ahead, to the far left, diametrically away from her, watching the traffic coming into the circle, which would have prior right of way. He was looking for an upcoming gap, trying to time it, hoping to roll up to the line and squirt on through, one unbroken move. She sprinted, hard, 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 and he moved up, craning left, looking for the gap that would be his. Seeing half a gap, rolling, rolling, the cars ahead of him clearing, the gap tightening, not really a gap at all, but his last chance, so he went for it, hitting the gas, wrenching the wheel, smashing into her. As she sprinted into the space, she had been sure would remain, because surely no driver would try to use it. She went up in the air, and down on his windshield rail. Impossibly loud metallic thumps and crashes, and he braked hard, and she spun on the shiny roof and clattered over the inclined tailgate and landed, head first, on the blacktop. Reacher butted all the paperwork into a neat stack and put it back on Christopher's desk. Christopher said, "Almost time to get down to business. Do you know the committee room number?" Reacher said, "Yes." "Do you know where it is?"
"No."
"Good. I'm not going to tell you. I want you wandering around like a little lost country boy. I want everything about this thing to be realistic from the get-go."
"Nothing about this thing is realistic, and nothing about this thing is going to work."
"Look on the bright side. You might get lucky. One of them might be into rough trade." "All on the Army's dime, too."
Reacher said nothing. He used the door on F Street and turned right and left onto New Jersey Avenue, and then the Capitol building was right there in front of him, half a mile ahead, big and white and shining in the sun. He looped around into the plaza and went up the steps. A Capitol cop looked at his ID and gave him a barrage of directions so confusing that Reacher knew he would need a couple of refreshers along the way, which he got, first from another guard and then from a page. The designated committee room had an impressive door made from polished mahogany, and inside it had an impressive table made from the same wood. Around the table were seated four people.
One was the transcriber. He was in shirt sleeves and had a court reporter machine in front of him. The other three were clearly the Army procurement officer and the Marine Corps procurement officer and the Marine sniper. The two officers were in uniform and the sniper was in a cheap suit, probably a recon Marine, a Delta wannabe. The officers shook hands, and the sniper gave a millimetric nod, which Reacher returned equally briefly, which, for two alleged snipers, was effusive, and for a dogface and a jarhead, meeting for the first time, was practically like rolling around on the floor in an ecstatic bear hug. There was no one else in the room. No political staffers, none of the liaison women. The clock in Reacher's head said the meeting was due to start inside a minute. The clock on the wall was a minute fast, so the meeting was already underway according to Capital Time. But nothing was happening. No one seemed to care. The Marine sniper was mute, and the procurement guys were clearly as happy to waste time sitting quiet as to waste it talking up a storm about a lost cause. The clock ticked. No one spoke. The jarhead stared into space, infinitely still. The officers moved in their chairs and got comfortable. Reacher copied the jarhead. Then, eventually, the staffers came in, followed by three women in Army Class A uniform. Three women, not four. Class A uniform, female officer, the nameplate is adjusted to individual figure differences and centered horizontally on the right side between 1 and 2 inches above the top button of the coat. Reacher scanned the black plastic rectangles. DeWitt, Vaz, and Walker were there. Richardson was not. A and B and D were present, but C was missing. No Christine. The four staffers looked a little upset, and the three women looked very unhappy. They all sat down, in what were clearly their accustomed places, leaving one chair empty. And the guy at the head of the table said,
"Gentlemen, I'm afraid we have some very upsetting news. Earlier today, Colonel Richardson was struck by a car as she was running to work at Scott Circle."
Reacher's first thought was, running? Why? Was she late? But then he understood. Jogging, fitness, shower and dress at the office. He had seen people do that. The guy at the head of the table said,
"The driver of the car is a postal worker from the Capitol mailroom. Eyewitness accounts suggest risks were taken by both parties."
The Army procurement officer asked,
"But how is she? How's Christine?"
The guy at the head of the table said,
"She died at the scene."
Silence in the room. The guy said,
"Head trauma. From when she hit the windshield rail or from when she finally fell to the ground."
Silence. No sound in the room, except the patter of the transcriber's machine as he caught up with what had been said. Then even he went quiet. The guy at the head of the table said,
"Accordingly, I suggest we close down this process and resume it at a more suitable time."
The Army procurement officer asked,
"When?"
Well, let's schedule it for the next round of budget discussions.
When are those?
A year or so.
Silence. Then Bryony Walker said, No, sir. We have a duty to fulfill. The process must be completed. Colonel Richardson would have wanted it no other way.
No answer.
Walker said, The Army deserves to have its case made properly and its needs and requirements placed in the record. People would quickly forget our reason for abandoning this process. They would assume we had not been truly interested. So I propose we complete our mission by making certain every detail and every parameter have been adequately clarified and accurately recorded. Then at least our legislators will know exactly what they are approving or rejecting, as the case may be.
The guy at the head of the table said,
Does anyone wish to speak against the proposal?
No answer.
Very well,
the guy said.
We will do as Major Walker suggests and spend the rest of the day going over everything one more time, just in case there's something we missed.
And go over it they did. Reacher recognized the sequence of individual discussions from the transcripts. They started at the beginning and worked their way through. Most items were simply reiterated and reconfirmed, but there were some lingering live debates. Bryony Walker was all out for bolt action, the naval family, the accuracy issue. A bolt action was operated manually, as gently as you liked, so the gun stayed still afterwards, with no microscopic tremors running through it. On the other hand, a semi-automatic action was operated by gunpowder explosions and was absolutely guaranteed to put tremors into the gun afterwards, perhaps for a critical length of time.
How long?
One of the staffers asked.
Would be critical? Walker asked back.
No. How long do these tremors last?
Some fractions of a second, possibly.
How big are they?
Certainly big enough to hurt accuracy at 1,000 yards or more.
The staffer looked across the table and said,
Gentlemen.
The Army procurement guy looked at his Marine counterpart, who looked at his sniper, who stared into space. Then everyone looked at Reacher. Reacher said,
What was the first item you discussed?
The staffer said,
Cold shot accuracy.
Which is important. Why?
Because a sniper will often get just one opportunity.
With a bullet that was chambered when?
I think we heard testimony that it can have been several hours previously. Long waits seem to be part of the job.
Which means any tremors will have disappeared long ago. You could chamber the round with a hammer, if you assume the money shots are always going to be singles and widely spaced, possibly by hours or even days, then the action doesn't matter.
So you'd accept a semi-automatic sniper rifle?
No, sir, Reacher said. Major Walker is correct. Possibly the money shots won't always be the first shots, and accuracy is always worth pursuing whenever possible, and bolt actions are rugged, reliable, simple, and easy to maintain. They're also cheap.
So, then came a debate about which bolt action was best. The classic Remington had fans in the room, but so did Winchester and Seiko and Ruger. And at that point, Alice Vaz started up with more of her big-picture questions. She said, The way to understand our requirements for not only actions but also stocks and bedding, it seems to me, is to understand where and how this rifle will actually be used, at what altitude, at what barometric pressures, in what extremes of temperature and humidity, what new environments might it face. So to shut her up, the Army procurement guy ran through just about everything in the war plan's locker. No names and no specific details, of course, but all the meteorological implications. High altitude plus freezing mist. Extreme dry heat with sand infiltration. Rainforest humidity and high ambient temperature. In snow many degrees below zero. In downpours. And so on. Then one of the staffers insisted that the steel for the barrel had to be domestic, which was not a huge problem. Then another insisted that the optics had to be domestic too, which was a bigger problem. Reacher watched the women seated opposite. Darwin DeWitt wasn't saying much, which was a surprise after her star turns the first two times out. She was a little more than medium height and still lithe, like the teenage softball star she had been. She was dark-haired and pale-skinned, with features more likely to be called strong than pretty, but she was spared from being plain by mobile and expressive eyes. They were dark, and they moved constantly but slowly, and they blazed with intelligence and some kind of inner fire.
Maybe she was burning off surplus IQ to stop her head from exploding. Bryony Walker was the Navy daughter, and she looked it, neat and controlled and severe, except for an unruly head of hair, untamed even by what looked like a recent and enthusiastic haircut. She, too, had an animated face, and she, too, had a lot going on behind her eyes. Alice Vaz was the best-looking. Reacher didn't know the word. Elfin, maybe. Gamine. Probably somewhere in between. She had darker skin than the other two, and a cap of short dark hair, and the kind of eyes that switch between a twinkle and a death ray in, well, the blink of an eye. She was smaller than the other two, and slight in a European kind of way, and maybe smarter, too. Ultimately, she was controlling the conversation, by hemming it in with questions too boring to answer. She was making the others focus. The meeting dragged on. Reacher made no further contributions.